Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organization.
You are listening to the podcast Tea and Talk, presented to inform, educate, inspire, and encourage meaningful conversations on Bahamian arts and culture. My name is Robert Bain, dancer, teacher, choreographer, and someone who believes in the preservation of all things Bahamian. I am sitting down with persons of like mind to discuss the Bahamian perspective on the arts and the Bahamian way. Now, let's welcome our guests.
Welcome to another podcast of Tea and Talk. It's been a while. But this podcast is emanating from Nassau, Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of Bahamas. We boast of 700 of them, you know, and 30 of them are inhabited by beautiful people. You're always welcome to come down and visit. As a matter of fact, we have a great time here in the Bahamas. You know, we don't only work hard, we have a great time out of life. Let me just say that. But you know, the thing about this podcast, I'm hoping that at the end of this podcast, the person listening to it will be much smarter. You know, they would have learned something. Today, we have a very, very special guest. Now let me tell you about this guest. I met this guest many, many years ago, many moons ago, when she was a little one. I guess probably about 7, 8, probably 9. She used to be a student of Dance Bahamas School here in Nassau. She has stayed in dance, but like a lot of Bahamians that live away, those who are not into classical ballet or modern, she's chosen another genre of dance, and she's chosen a genre of dance they call burlesque. Now, I know a couple of years ago that became a thing. It came out, I think it was a movie about it. Now, if you travel the world, this is now something that's done in most dance studios. It has become a thing. It has become a thing. You know, persons have had some their opinions of it in the past, but you know something, she's going to help us a little bit to understand exactly what those things are. But we'll talk. We'll talk about that, and she will definitely give you an idea of what the whole thing is about and what she's about and what she's doing as a dancer, as a burlesque dancer. And today I want to welcome to Tea and Talk, Lindsay Brannan.
Hi.
Welcome home, man.
So good to be here.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a little while. Lindsay, tell us a little something about Lindsay Brannan.
Sure. So my name is Lindsay, as you just heard. I have been living in Vancouver, Canada for the last 15 years. And amongst the many adventures that I had there as a young adult, originally going there for school, I stumbled into the world of burlesque. And that has been my semi-career now for 11 years.
Wow.
In fact, May 1st was my 11th year anniversary, and I perform under the name Androsia Wild. My tagline is the Bahama Mama of burlesque.
I love it. I love it. That's, you know, other than talking about the culture, things here in the Bahamas and the dance and stuff like that and everything else, you know, we want to know what Bahamians are doing out there, you know, and I think that is important as well. I don't want us to be limited to just one thing or one thought.
No, exactly.
Yeah, there are many thoughts. And we
there always should be.
Yeah, right. So, Lindsay, tell us what is burlesque?
So the way that I've always found an easy way for people to kind of like articulate what it is theatrical striptease. So it is originally an art of affectionate parody. It is rooted from the Italian word burlesque, which is a parody, and it is originally a literary term which we would kind of associate with satire, pastiche, etc. Most people are usually thinking about it in a more theatrical way versus its original literary roots. So you would have burlesque shows that would parody news and topics of the day. We have this idea of high art and low art, for example. Same thing in these older forms of burlesque, where they were either lampooning something, maybe a political story or a big thing of national interest. They would lampoon it, taking it from its big, serious matter into absolute comedy. Mm-hmm. Or they would extravagate something that would seem to be very like common and base-born and turn it into like, oh no, this is the most serious thing on the planet. So that's where the origins, like the theatrical origins of burlesque kind of really root themselves. Burlesque as we know it now is still a performative nature. It is still a parody, but it kind of swung its way in the early 40s and onward into this parody of the body, this parody of sexualization, this parody of expression. Predominantly women or femme-identified individuals, but of course burlesque is for everybody, which is something I very strongly believe, and it is definitely something that our golden legends of burlesque, as we kind of affectionately call them, they weren't just women. There were men, there were queer individuals, there were gender nonconforming individuals that were all kind of using this parody of the way that they present themselves to tantalize, to inform, inspire, to tease, etc. There was a little bit of a slump once censorship laws really started cracking down in institutions. And then it kind of circled back up again with the popularity of someone who actually came to the Bahamas to perform a couple years ago, Dita Von Teese.
Okay.
Dita Von Teese, if you have never seen her, first off, you should go look her up. She is an absolutely phenomenal talent. But she is one of the progenitors of what we would call like the neo-burlesque movement. So when it came back into popularity in the 90s, early 2000s, and where we are right now, where it now became this opportunity for especially women to kind of redefine themselves in a way where they get to reclaim the way that they present themselves into the world, the way that they present their bodies, the way that they command an audience, usually combining things that combining dance, combining the older legends' ways of parading and posing and the delicate removal. Because, of course, the art of burlesque is still the art of the tease. It is not, oh, you're looking at a person with their clothes off, but it is how did you get from point A to point B?
Yes.
I don't think we're in the neo-burlesque period anymore. We've had some very interesting discussions about that because neo-burlesque at this point is like close to 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really know what era of burlesque we're getting into now, but at least in the time that I've been performing, burlesque has changed and shifted in so many ways, and being a part of it in Vancouver has been honestly one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done in my life.
Really?
Yes.
So ask a question. What? So your name.
Yes.
How did you choose that name?
So
your stage name,
my
right?
stage name, yes.
Yes.
So Androsia Wild came from the fact that when I decided I wanted to move into burlesque, I wanted people to know that I was from the Bahamas. I wanted people to know that I wasn't like a Vancouver-born and bred individual.
Right.
Usually when you come up with a burlesque name, the easiest way to think about it is like you're coming up with a very cheeky stage name, mm-hmm. right? Something that has a pun implied. For example, one of our colleagues who actually just recently competed in the Burlesque Hall of Fame in Las Vegas yesterday, her stage name is Ariel Helvetica, which is a pun on the typefaces. And she's also a very tall, leggy person. So, like, that pun makes a lot of sense. Sometimes people will do more body puns. Some will do puns that are referencing things in pop culture. Another burlesque performer in Vancouver is April O'Peel, as opposed to April O'Neil from the Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
But I wanted a cultural name.
Yes.
And being one of the few BIPOC bodies, and if you've never heard that term before, that's Black, Indigenous, people of color. Mm-hmm. Being one of the few BIPOC individuals in Vancouver, that's a great thing because I'm very easy to spot, and also not a great thing because there's not a lot of us that perform. So I wanted something to be like an immediate cultural signifier. My father's father lineage is in Andros.
Okay.
My husband's family is from Andros. So to me, I wanted to carry pieces of who I am and the people who have loved me and allowed me to come into the fullest extent of who I am. And I thought of Androsia, and I'm like, well, that's easy. So obviously, I make no claim to the Androsia brand, but it's also a really fun topic because I get to then talk about what actual Androsia is. Mm-hmm. And then I chose Wild at the end, not just because it's a really common like burlesque surname, but... As you could probably tell, Mr. Bain, I have always kind of bucked the trend about what would be seen as acceptable Bahamian behavior.
Yeah, yes.
My interests have always flown completely off the radar, and I've always been very stubborn. So in my mind, I wanted to present myself as a daughter of these islands, because I am, and I'm very fiercely protective of that, but I am also wild. I am not what you expect.
Yeah.
I am not ever going to be what any Bahamian expects.
I know.
But, but I still wanted to have that signature. Like, I am still proud of my home while for very fiercely independent of it. So that became Androsia Wild.
So, Linz, tell me, how many persons, Bahamians, out there do you know that's doing the same thing? That's I know you introduced me to the...
I introduced you to a legend of burlesque. So her name, her stage name is Shauna the Black Venus.
Yes.
She's actually based in Hawaii. Right now, but it wasn't until I went to the Burlesque Hall of Fame in 2023, I was there as a competitor, where I was meeting the legends, which is one of the greatest opportunities to learn about, you know, what burlesque was like back in the day. And I was drawn to her because she was one of the few black bodies that was there. And I've always read about Shauna, but she was always listed as a US-based entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I introduced myself as Androsia, she's like, oh, I know that name. It's like, oh, why do you, how do you know their name? I was like, oh, I'm from Nassau. And my world spun. I burst into tears. I was just like, what? I had gone through this entire time. By the time I went to Las Vegas, we're looking at about 9 years of burlesque for me. I had always thought I was the only Bahamian out there. And then all of a sudden I discovered not only was I not the only Bahamian, I was not the only Bahamian in leaps and bounds, because Shauna was performing in the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
During the golden era of burlesque. So I was just like, hang on a second. That means probably anybody else who was maybe performing in a similar fashion during that time, but based in the Bahamas, by all extents, could probably also qualify as a legend.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, after the festival happened, I had an opportunity to actually host Shauna in 2024 as a part of the Vancouver International Burlesque Festival, which I am the artistic director of.
All right.
So I got to bring in several headliners, and I was just like, oh, I am absolutely bringing you here. So I know that Shauna doesn't consider herself much a Bahamian anymore because she's been gone for so long.
Yes.
But I always tell her that you are actually the original Bahama Mama.
Once a Bahamian, always a Bahamian. That ain't going no place.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've discovered, I mean, I'm aware of burlesque. I've always been aware of it. As an artist, I'm aware of most, basically a lot, I have a lot of information on different genres of dance, and burlesque is one of those that's have always been in my sight as well. I mean, not in my sight to a point where it was of interest,
right?
But it became I became interested after you, right?
Which is really exciting.
Yeah, because you know, I was like, okay, but I realized that they are developing. It's developing itself. Is evolving.
Yes.
Because I've learned too that they have. Certain techniques as well, eh?
Yes, they do.
Right?
Absolutely. Because, I mean, like, everybody is coming to burlesque with their own level of dance experience or lack of dance experience, for that matter. Mm-hmm. Like, even though, like, I will call myself a dancer and I will defend people like teaching burlesque classes in particular, as I also do teach. But yeah, you don't need to have like a full roster of technique to pull from, but it is helpful because it lends something to the whole visual experience. Like, you can tell when somebody comes in with a measure of ballet experience mm-hmm. or a measure of ballroom, especially if they are doing a lot of duets mm-hmm. or group numbers. For me in particular, something that I end up pulling from is actually a lot of my African dance teaching that I got from you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of build that into just things that they have gotten from over the years. And I think there's something to also kind of like keep in mind that burlesque, as we now know it, because it did not start off this way, it became this way. We owe a lot of the techniques that we learn about in burlesque to two very big groups. One I've already mentioned, which is, of course, the legends of burlesque who are out there working those circuits way back. But we also owe it to sex workers. Mm-hmm. We owe it to the women of color. We owe it to the men of color. We owe it to queer individuals. We owe it to trans individuals. The individuals who, for whatever reason, may have found themselves working in the clubs to survive, right? And a lot of our legends of burlesque often had to make the choice once censorship kind of clamped down on the more theatrical shows about what they were going to do. Some decided to not go into the strip clubs. Some did, mm-hmm. right? So anybody who, like, things as burlesque as like classy or stripping, I always kind of frown at that because it does a lot of disservice to the individuals that actually got us to where we are. Right. A lot of like burlesque dancers, a lot of people who go into teaching burlesque in particular, often present this very sanitized, like, oh, it's all cutesy and feminine empowerment. And it can be, but you also got a lot of those moves from Black and brown trans workers who are in the clubs.
Yes.
Who are dancing in gigantic stilettos and utilizing their things that they've done on the pole and taking it out of that original context into what you now think is better than, which I don't agree with that. I think that is that's a lot of whore phobia that I don't really abide by. But a lot of the techniques that burlesque tends to have comes from those two avenues, and then of course sprinkled in with whatever the individual has. Me being one of the few BIPOC performers, I have often shied away from a lot of the expectations of what people think about burlesque. I'm not ever going to say that you can't point your toes, mm-hmm. right? And in fact, we know why you point your toes. It creates a lovely line, especially if you were a smaller or a shorter performer, that can sometimes be to your advantage. But I don't want to do that all the time. And in fact, I can't physically. Mm. So oftentimes I would say there's a very good split between the numbers that I do where I am wearing heels, where I'm leaning into more Western understanding or appreciation of beauty. And then there are other times where I'm going to say, screw it. Mm. I'm doing something that's African inspired. So I'm going to go barefoot and I'm going to flex my feet and I'm going to bend down in a way that might look unpolished right. or not skillful, but is in fact skillful. You're just not familiar with it. Mm. And that's not my fault.
Yeah. So you have a kind of a primitive in some instance, but would you say that sometimes?
I wouldn't say primitive because again, the connotation that people will tend to think from primitive is that again, it is like uncultured or whatever.
Uncultured, yes.
I would say I have a more instinctual and ancestral take okay. to burlesque.
So tell me, how do you, are you able to incorporate your Bahamian?
Oh, absolutely. So it will happen in a couple of ways. So it'll either be sometimes I'll bust out a heel and toe. Mm-hmm. I've done a conch style on stage.
Yeah.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
Sometimes again, I will pick up the African moves that I've learned from you mm-hmm. with regards to how I hold myself, and it also translates a lot into how I teach. But the easiest way for me to bring my Bahamian-ness out on stage is use Bahamian music.
Okay.
Use things that are very connected to me. So I have two acts in particular. One that my parents got to see live when mm-hmm. they came to see me in Vancouver a couple of years ago, and it was called Coconut Woman.
I think I saw that.
Probably saw a couple of photos that I've done of it. So I start off in a dress garb that is very akin to what like Bahamian women would have worn working at the straw markets in the 1950s, 60s, 70s. But I color coded it where I was wearing a white blouse, a blue head wrap with a flower in my hair, and a black sash and a giant blue skirt with yellow ruffles. the colors of the Bahamian flag. And the song I used was Freddie Munnings' recording of Coconut Woman. That's the intro.
Woman, da, da, da,
exactly.
Da,
and then
nice.
It transitions into Baja Men's Gin and Coconut Water.
Okay.
As I remove those top layers, I start off with like a coconut basket on my head, right? And then I move into Gin and Coconut Water by Baja Men, which was the 90s. So like my first like major, I guess I want to say like exposure to Bahamian culture. I was like four, I think, when I first saw that music video. And then I am now a palm tree because my under things, my bra, my skirt, my underwear, and all the rest of that are brown. And I have these giant green feather fans that as I hold them over my head, I look like I'm a palm tree.
Okay.
And I end the act, you know, completely naked except for stuff covering my breast and underwear on. And I drink from a coconut on stage. And I pour the water over me.
Good visual.
It's great, right? It's fantastic. My favorite memory of that particular number is after I left the stage, one of our instructors in the burlesque scene, Cherry on Top, said, I saw your mom dancing in the audience the entire time. And I'm like, yes, that's what I wanted. Everyone else can enjoy the act. And I hope you do. But I want when people from home see it. So I want them to see.
So what is the, your parents, how do they feel about you? I mean, that's
always a tricky one because oftentimes, you know, again, the connotation of burlesque being stripping, which it is, I will always be very clear about that. And even though there are differences between burlesque and, say, working in a strip club, for example, I'm in far more control of the level of audience interaction. And in fact, most burlesque audiences never interact with the performers.
Okay.
Right? There is nothing. It is literally you are on a stage and you are performing. And at the end of the day, your clothes are off. But you are still taking your clothes off to music and for the entertainment of an audience. So you are still a stripper, right? That is already a hard pill to swallow in today's age. It is harder for BIPOC performers in particular. I have many friends and colleagues who, when their parents have found out about it, they have outright disowned them, even though they are not, quote unquote, selling their bodies. I mean, they are, but they aren't. They're not doing anything that jeopardizes their behavior. They're just their safety. They're not doing anything wrong. They are defining themselves in a way that is very empowering for them. And unfortunately, a lot of people see that as wrong. So for a very long time, I actually didn't tell my parents what I was doing. And again, when you're 3,000 miles away in another part of the continent, you can get away with a lot of things, really. But when I finally told them, and I told them I told them what I was doing. And they gave me the usual spiel of just like, are you sure this is what you want to do? And I'm like, I am with people who are friends. I am with people who are not pressuring me to do anything that I don't want to do. And I'm enjoying myself. And they were like, okay, maybe don't show photos to your dad. I'm like, gotcha. That changed in 2019 when the first Bahamian act that I actually did, which was called Tribute to the Obeah Man.
I think I saw that one as well.
So Tribute to the Obeah Man was my first time really grappling with what it meant to sit in multiple intersectionalities in this world as a woman, as a black woman, as a Bahamian, as a stripper. And I wanted something that was like, what if I just was able to just like pull back all of those additional labels and just do something that just felt right in the moment? So using Exuma the Obeah Man by our great Bahamian legend, Tony McKay, a.k.a. Exuma, I did a number that was pulling from a couple of ancestral links. So the women who wore white when they go down to the water to seek guidance from various African deities, or even the folks who jumped off cliffs thinking that they could still fly back home, because this is also coming from a point of like homesickness for me. That song is so primal, right? It's just drums. It's just cowbell shaking. It's maybe a little bit of percussion that's kind of happening there, but it's a very raw number. And I start off in all white, and I eventually remove my layers, and I'm dressed in rags. I'm not even rhinestoned, right? And a lot of people think like, oh, with burlesque, you need to be glitzy and all the rest of it. It's like, no, I want this to be as bare as humanly possible. And another thing that people tend to count on is that it's very face-oriented, right? The burlesque performer's face, more so than their body, and at least in my personal opinion, actually leads the audience through the emotions that they should be experiencing alongside you. I hid my face for a lot of that number with a giant straw hat because I wanted to literally call in the spirit of Obeah, the spirit of this ancestral practice that is still penalized mm-hmm. in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. Or just this idea of just like connecting to whatever this root was before colonization turned us into something else. And that is now my defining act. I remove my face for the most of it. I have a piece of driftwood that I now use as like an Obeah staff mm-hmm. as I call in. And the only time that people see my face is in two points. One, in the section of the song where Exuma says, Obeah, 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 Obeah's in me. I remove the hat from my face and I yell that out to the audience. I will not say that I am an Obeah practitioner. It's even if I wanted to, it's very hard to do so when you are in Vancouver, Canada, right? But I wanted to yell, just like, hi, you are looking at me at my rawest, mm-hmm. at who I am. I will be a born, bred, gadet Bahamian. Mm-hmm. You cannot take that from me, just as how you cannot take Obeah from the Bahamian people. Yeah. And the only other time is at the end of the number when he's just kind of vocalizing and then I'm just blissfully remove the hat from my head. I have this big smile on my face. I am almost as naked as the day that I'm born. And then I go off the stage. The first time I did that number, it just felt like, oh, I'm channeling something very, very strong. So when that number got into the 2019 Vancouver International Burlesque Festival, so several years before I eventually became the artistic director, I told my parents, and I was like, I just made it onto our country's or Canada's one of Canada's biggest stages in the longest running festival, and I am pretty sure I am the only Bahamian to do it. I would like to show you this video. And they both watched it, and they were both very happy and very proud of me.
That's important.
Yes. And from that point on, I knew that like I could do, well, I know I'm going to do whatever I want anyway, but I knew that I could do whatever I wanted in burlesque, and they would always be so proud of me. So when they came to visit in like 2019, a little bit later on in the year, like they saw me do like a more theatrical, like a regular theater show, but they got to meet some of the community that I had performed with and stuff like that. And then they came back in 2023, 2023, and they actually saw me perform for the first time.
Okay.
Like both of my parents in the audience, and they were very supportive. They are now known as Mama and Papa Wild to all of my Vancouver friends and community.
So, Linz, I was kind of, when I first saw it, I think somebody introduced me to it. They said, "Yo, I saw something of your student, one of your students, and they're doing burlesque." And I go like, really? And I think they shared a video of me. I can't remember how it went down, mm-hmm. but for a minute there, I saw it, but I wasn't.
You couldn't clock that it was me.
Well, I was like, that's Linz. Linz's just like that. She's very strong. I've known you, and I know that you've been opinionated. Let me put it this way.
You don't have to be polite with me, Mr. Yeah, Wayne. It's fine.
No, you always knew who you were.
Yes.
Right? And so I understood that very. And you and I, we've had our time together. We spent a lot of time together.
Yes.
I remember you teasing you coming into the studio with your little toothpick. He goes, "It's not a toothpick, Mr. Bay." But
he's referring to my bow staff when I was doing martial arts.
Yes, there you go. No, but no, and she spent a lot of time here at Dance Bahamas. As a matter of fact, she was among the first. About we've been 25 years old this year, and
yeah, that means I would have been one of your
first. Yeah, so I basically had an idea of who Lindsay Brennan was. I did. So then I saw it, and I went, okay, because I've seen other things. I've seen your photographs of you modeling.
Yes.
And I also knew that you also was in a movie.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I was an extra in a movie. I had a very small acting career.
But that was important to me.
that particular portion of my life has been important to a lot of people I have found here, yeah. which has been very funny.
Yeah. Bahamians are very proud of their own. But let me ask you a question. How much preparation do you take in preparing a number? Is it staged? Is it choreographed? Is it improvised?
So it really depends. It really depends on like, is this a number that's going to be like a one and done type of deal mm-hmm. where I won't really have to think about this again? I'm just really here to look cute. Or am I doing something with a purpose? I think all burlesque has a purpose, but for me, I do tend to create acts that mean something to me. And if it turns into a one and done thing, I get really upset. So I will do a lot of internal preparation where I will think about what I want to communicate through the story of the music or through any particular specific pieces of choreo. I will think a lot about the costume, and I will definitely think a lot about the music. And I'll have times where I'll be listening to the same song for months, which can get very irritating after a while. But as far as choreo is concerned, if there isn't a specific reason why something should be choreoed, I usually don't. I'm actually a huge improviser. I like to joke with my students in that I am the biggest BSer out there when it comes to dancing.
Yeah.
Because while I am teaching you a choreo, I am making this up on the fly because I think this feels good in my body. And that's the thing that I actively try to teach to my students. It's just like, if it doesn't feel good in your body, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think that because 18 people who you've taken classes with or have been doing this since, you know, God was alive, are doing splits or are doing X, Y, and Z, are able to do these cool body rolls. Like, just because they're doing it doesn't mean you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You can find out who you are specifically, and that requires you to know who you are and to know what your body is capable of doing and knowing what it is that you want to convey. And once you're able to kind of figure out all of those, your body will lead you through very nicely. There are some numbers that I have that are like 50% choreo, 50% improv. There are a few numbers that I've done that are 100% choreo because it was necessary. I have more fun when I get to improvise and just go with the flow.
Let me just say to the audience, the lingo, the terminologies have changed. We grew up hearing the word choreography. This new generation of dancers are referring to it as choreo. I have a problem with that sometimes.
It's too many letters, man.
and learning to spell it is another thing, right?
A.
Okay, yeah, but that's what the dancers do today. They do, they shorten it. I wouldn't say it, but they do shorten it. And, let's see, Lindsay, it's important, and I think your experience as a dance student lent to it. It's about studying the information, having the information input it into your body, and then it comes out.
Exactly. And again, I'm not saying that to disparage anybody who is like very into doing choreo, because for some people that just, they need something a little bit more regimented.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem when I know exactly who taught you because you all come out looking the same. To me, that just hurts my spirit. I can't do it, right? Every time I open up a class, I tell my students, I am not training you to become the next Androja Wild. I am still here and breathing. I am very capable of creating the legacy that I want for myself.
There you go.
I want you to start your own journey, and I want you to know that you don't have to do X, Y, and Z to be considered or to be considered a viable performer. Because even I struggle calling myself a veteran performer, but I'm getting to the point where I am in my scene. There are still people who don't like the way I move.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my Obeyaman number, I found out from people who were running the festival at the time that every single non-black person, every single non-indigenous person, every single non-performer of color who was on that board and saw my number didn't want me on that stage because they considered my work to be too unpolished, that they didn't get it. And it was on the strength of all of the other persons who were on that board, who were on the adjudication panel, who saw what I was trying to do and just like, no, this is important to actually place on that stage. And I owe those individuals a huge wealth of gratitude because I'm already used to people thinking whatever they want about me.
Mm-hmm.
But when I am trying to present myself as authentically as possible and you tell me that that's not good enough because of your own colonialized expectations of what a dance is supposed to be or whatever, just like, I'm not going to be, and again, there's no shade to every black performer who does this, but I'm not going to be out here putting a banana skirt around my waist and calling myself Josephine Baker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's important for a reason. We love Josephine Baker in this house, but I don't need to do that to be valid in a non-black person or a non-black performer's eyes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I should be able to just present who I am and where I have come from through everything that I have learned and be seen just as viable as someone who's been doing this for 20 plus years and comes with all the fancy tips and tricks that you could think of.
Well, I find that persons, once they don't understand what you're doing, they have a problem, but that is their problem.
Yeah, and that is their problem. Yeah, and now jokes on them. I'm now running the festival.
Exactly. Okay.
And now they can sit and stay mad about it.
Yeah. Okay. Right. You know that there were a couple of Bahamians I'm thinking about right now. I don't know if you're aware of them.
Mm.
Like Naomi Taylor.
Yes, I do know Naomi Taylor.
Yeah, she a Bahamian dancer, and she had there's an act that she have. As a matter of fact, I explained it in my book. Mm-hmm. And I apologize, Lindsay. I was supposed to bring Lindsay's book today, and I just completely I was just interested in getting here so that we could do this podcast. She had an act where she actually used hats.
Yeah.
The hats just covered her partially nude body.
Right.
You know, we have had, there was a lady they call Biner. Have you heard of Biner?
I have, only briefly.
Right. She was a dancer. I don't know if you would consider her a burlesque dancer, but mm-hmm. she worked along with Paul Mears.
Yes.
That's also in my book. As a matter of fact, my book can be purchased at Logos, Dungalik Studios, and at the University of Bahamas, Chapter 1. So you need some information on Bahamian dance, it's right there. Okay, so
get that promo in.
Yeah, there's a little plug for me there. All right, but yeah, they actually boarded that same thing. And I think they were inspired also by other burlesques based on the information that I have gotten mm-hmm. about them. I can now see that what they did kind of run parallel to what you're doing right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that was like really fascinating once I got in contact with Shauna the Black Venus. And then a little while ago, I had made a post mainly to my Vancouver audience, but I think a couple of Bahamians saw it too, where I was just interested in like, okay, well, what was around in the cabaret club scene? Because we grew up knowing that obviously like tiki bars and all the rest of that kind of became popular around the 60s, 70s, you know, the early tourism boom and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, is there any like footage still living? And I don't remember who specifically caught the footage, but I believe it was one of Freddie Munnings' seniors. Yeah.
Ray Munnings.
Yeah, so I think it was Ray Munnings' video that I found randomly. And there was a clip from inside one of the old Calypso clubs here in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm.
Probably Cat and the Fiddle.
Yes, it was Cat and the Fiddle. And mm-hmm. there was a dancer featured. And I, again, like, my world was rocked. I was like, there's another one. Mm-hmm. Like, were they necessarily taking their clothes off at the time? No, probably not. But again, a lot of the dance that we know as like exotic dancing, because you're doing it to beguile, to entice, to mm-hmm. tease an audience, your fire dancers, mm-hmm. the Chipmans mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They're I wouldn't even call them cousins. They're siblings. Mm-hmm. Like as far as like what that parallel is.
Yeah. Yeah, but they back in the day, they referred to them as shake dancers.
Yeah, shake dancers.
Yeah.
And that's a common phrase for a lot of black burlesque performers who are based in the United States.
Yeah.
There is a lovely lady by the name of Bibi Bardot, who is a burlesque historian, a black burlesque historian in particular. Mm-hmm. And she does a lot of writing about shake dancers, hoochie coochie girls, and all of those individuals who, again, were running parallel, usually teaching some of the older white ladies all the stuff that they eventually took on to for their own career.
Right.
Right? So, like, shake dancing is a term that I learned relatively recently. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I would definitely say that a good portion of Bahamian dancers would be qualified as shake dancers.
Shake dancers, yeah.
By that same logic.
I think their inspiration came from stuff that was you know, that came from the outside. So, yeah. Just like the parade on Junkanoo.
Yeah.
During the Junkanoo parade, which in 1958, Maureen Duvalier, mm-hmm. Along with the Chipman brothers, actually, that came about because they were inspired by what they saw at the American football halftime, you know? So
right.
they brought that here. So people saw things and they were able
brought
to
it up.
Right, yeah.
And let me be clear, like, they also probably saw a lot of things that was also happening in the Caribbean, because while there aren't a lot of Bahamians doing burlesque, there's a bunch of people in Cuba, mm-hmm. bunch of people from Jamaica, a lot of the people who I know now have like linked ancestry and stuff like that. There is a Cuban burlesque legend who's still alive by the name of Gina Bonbon in particular.
Okay.
And I actually have had the opportunity to meet her as well. And she doesn't actively perform as much anymore now. But yeah, that's just across the street as far as we're personally concerned.
Well, you
right?
know, too, in 1959, you know, when Cuba went through their transition, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Cubans came to the Bahamas. They came and they moved to the United States. But those that came to the Bahamas also brought parts of their culture.
Absolutely.
And so that could have possibly been embedded into some of the things they did.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But, Lindsay, you know, I'm hoping that persons have a better understanding of it, what you do and what burlesque dancing is, because, I mean, even to me, you know, I I've always had an opinion of it. I saw it as dance.
Yeah.
But I now understand the deeper aspect of it a little bit more. And thank you for that.
Yeah, all absolutely. Right?
So, and I hope that the audience also gather that as well.
Absolutely. And I definitely want to say, like, also one thing that's, like, really big and important is, like I said earlier, that burlesque is for everybody. One of my most favorite things, especially now that I am a leader of a burlesque troupe in Vancouver, and now that I teach, and now that I'm the artistic director of our local festival, which is celebrating its 20th year next year, it doesn't have to look any one way. You can do things that are scary and still be burlesque. You can do things that are heartfelt. You can do things that are sad and somber. You can do things that are based off of your culture. You can do things that are based off of pop culture. In fact, that's exactly how I got my start.
So hold on. All of this wonderful stuff, right?
Yeah.
All of this and ending with shedding of clothes, right?
Ending, that's like the only thing that's in common. Is like at the end of the, at the end of it, you are more naked than when you started. Or unless you're doing a reverse strip where you start naked and then you put on clothes, which could also be very impactful.
Interesting.
Right? But like I got my start doing Star Wars burlesque.
Okay.
Because somebody asked me to be part of their Star Wars show because they needed a Lando Calrissian. And you can't have a white person being Lando Calrissian, obviously. So I was just like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And that has been my signature nerdlesque act, being Lando in all of these productions, which also led me, which also ties into like, when I went to school, I studied illustration and animation, but my real interest is adaptation.
Okay.
Right? I love seeing how certain stories are able to adapt from one medium to the other. And dance is just another artistic medium.
Mm-hmm.
So the stories that I'm able to tell through burlesque, they can't be told the same way for a visual practice like drawing a comic or creating a film. But there's a couple of things that can kind of bleed into, where you're combining things from like maybe a movie that you're inspired by or a lighting trick or something referencing their costumes. I have a Star Wars act as Lando. I have several Star Wars acts as Lando. I have an act as Lieutenant Uhura, and I got to tell Nichelle Nichols about it before she passed, which was fantastic.
That's awesome.
I have acts based from Disney movies. I have acts.
Tell me about your experience with Nichelle Nichols.
So she came to a convention in Vancouver. I want to say this was like 2014, 2015 or so. No, it was 2015, very early. She was doing the con circuit, special guest, obviously. And for a while, I had, I've always loved Star Trek, right? I grew up watching some of the...
We both.
Yeah.
You're Trekkies, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I remember like some of my early formative memories was like watching some early Star Trek with my dad.
Hold on. Your dad is a Trekkie?
My dad watches everything. I wouldn't necessarily call him a Trekkie, but he watches everything, right? But, you know, Uhura is an important character to so many people.
Yeah,
right?
On all levels.
We could be here all day specifically talking about that. But around this particular time, I was coming up with an Uhura number because I am one of a few darker skinned performers, definitely one of the few black ones. So I was just like, oh, this would be a cool thing to kind of adapt after I kind of got my toes in the water with Lando. And I remembered her scene in Star Trek V, where to lure some individuals that they were trying to capture, they have Uhura as a honeypot. So there's a scene of her dancing in the moonlight in the space desert, covering herself with palm fronds.
She was a dancer.
Yeah, she was a phenomenal dancer.
Amazing dancer, yeah.
Right? And I saw that scene and I'm like, oh, that's an act. That is definitely an act. So I have, which is now turned into a Nichelle Nichols tribute act upon her passing.
Wonderful.
But I have a Jungle House remix to the song that she sings, which is Hiroshima's The Moon's A Window to Heaven. Someone had remixed it years ago on the internet, and I found it, and I'm like, I can't dance to the original The Moon's A Window to Heaven because it's just a smidge too slow. I love New Age, but it's a bit too slow. I want to dance. I want to shake, right? Okay. So I found this Jungle House remix, and a friend of mine helped me do a costume, but not based off of the original Uhura, but mirror Uhura because it's a shorter crop and a shorter skirt, which means I can move a little bit easier.
Okay.
I turned the palm fronds into feather fans, green feather fans that had been specially dyed so they look like palm leaves. And I dance barefoot. And then I start off looking like mirror Uhura. And, of course, as things get taken off, I then have the regular, her specific communication insignia as my pasties. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, and it just turns into this big love letter of what that moment is in the movie specifically,
yeah.
But also just Uhura in all of her complexities, both when she is the Uhura that you know and love, to when you encounter her in the Mirror Universe, and even the reboot. Like, any iteration of Uhura, you are continuing such an incredible legacy, and that number is just encapsulated.
Yes.
So I met Nichelle, and I met her before the number was done, but I said, hey, I have this really cool idea for a number, and it's based off of you. And I told her about it, and she's like, that sounds delightful. I hope you actually get to do it. Mm. I got a signature on some work that a fan artist I've done of her, so that's also in my house at home. I've gotten to do it a couple of times. I even got to headline a show in Victoria, British Columbia with that. They brought me over specifically to do that number.
What an awesome experience.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. Having the blessing of like one of your big pop culture idols is like really cool. I've done the same thing with Billy Dee Williams for Mylando.
Okay.
As well, but I actually got to meet him in Mylando costume. It was very cool.
Oh, wow. It's amazing, Lindsay. It's,
yeah.
I'm very proud of you, man.
Thank you.
When I think about it, you know, I'm always wanting the dancers to succeed, and you know, and like to know that they are doing something, you know, that's attached to what we've been doing here.
Yeah.
You know, and you're doing that, and you not only doing it, but you have a very clear understanding of what it's all about, and that's amazing. And I'm glad that you're sharing that with us today, and sharing it with the person that listened. This podcast, our podcast, Tea and Talk, has been listened in a couple of places in the world, so people will get an opportunity to actually hear some of the podcasts. So I'm going to be checking their analytics and seeing how well it's doing out there, and it's normally very favorable. So
if you see an interesting bump from people in Canada, because obviously I will be telling them about people about this.
Yes,
and then you can
see them. We do have some listeners in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this has just been amazing. But you came home.
I came home for the first time in the summer in about a decade.
Yeah.
The last time I was home was winter time, which was fine. It was for my dad's birthday. It was great. It was also a little cold for me. So
what did you you came home this time to do what?
I came home for Carnival. So my brother is the co-owner of Mass Chaos, a local festival band here. And I had always wanted to participate in Carnival, not just because it's my brother and therefore supporting the family, but as I've gotten older, gotten a huge appreciation for all of Caribbean culture, not just the Bahamas, but what everyone is doing, because there's so much similarity. There's so many things that we have taken in our little corner of the Caribbean and just turned into its own thing, where it's turned into something else over here. And I just find that really lovely. And I think being able to experience it in whatever capacity I can is a blessing. So when I knew that I had the opportunity to finally come home in the summer, I was just like, all right, it has to be for Carnival weekend. And I got to play Mass with my brother's band yesterday. And
very
I am
good.
Sporting one hell of a sunburn for it.
Oh, yeah.
But that is exactly what I came here for, because currently summertime in Vancouver on average is maybe 60 degrees Fahrenheit, and I can deal with that.
Yeah.
I need actual sun when I'm here.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. It is so good to have you home and to just be talking to you. Like I said, we've been planning this for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have a chat
with Shauna.
Yes.
I would love for that. I know that when I told her that people back home would be super excited to hear about her, she waved it off. She's like, no one's going to care. I'm like, girl, yes, they will.
Yes, things have changed.
Things have changed, for sure.
Yes,
I would definitely love to pour a good... I'll send this podcast link to her. So, Shauna, if you get to this particular point, you're going to be on this. I know when we met first, I said I was going to bring you to Vancouver at some point, and it took me a year. So even if it takes me a year to get you on my dance teacher's podcast, we'll be doing it.
Yes. So, Shauna, I'm looking forward to speaking with you, Shauna, at some point. I'm really excited about that. To know that there are Bahamians out there doing exactly what you guys are doing. And I really appreciate you. And I'm looking forward to having a word with you. So when Lindsay reach out to you, and we can do this by, the world is so small now, we can actually do this via Zoom. And
exactly.
it works the same. So it's awesome.
Yeah.
Lindsay, I want to thank you very much for coming on this podcast on Tea and Talk. Anything you want to say to your people while you're here? The younger people, you want to encourage anybody?
I mean, as opinionated as I was as a kid, I did not think that taking my clothes off on a stage and getting paid for it was going to be anything, any part of my story. Burlesque was super important to me because it allowed me to redefine myself in terms that I've actually felt comfortable with. And as much as I love talking about the Bahamas and my heritage, how I grew up with people, I am also very honest about how some aspects of the time of when I grew up and even just the culture that I was surrounded by was often quite harsh to women sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it still kind of is, let's be real. But I want to encourage anyone who is listening, but I do especially want to say this to the young little girls, because I thought about them when I saw them on the carnival route watching us, that I hope that you know that it is okay no matter which path you decide to take, so long as you know who you are. Not who your parents think you are, not who your partner thinks you are, not who your boss thinks you are, or what some random individual on the street has an opinion about you. Those things don't mean lick. What matters is who you are. And if that means that at some point in time you see somebody confidently walking down the street wearing nothing but a bikini and fishnets, and they happen to give you, you know, a beautiful sunny smile and be like, hey, you know, you can do what I do and it's okay, I want them to know that. I'm not asking for, you know, the next generation burlesque performers, although maybe I am. I would love to have more Bahamians. God knows I'd love to have more Bahamians. But I think burlesque allowed me to finally be very comfortable in who I am and not have any, like, dismay about it. Because, I mean, like, what else can you say about me? I take my clothes off for money. I've already crossed off every single thing you could possibly say disparaging about me at this point. So it really and truly does not matter. Because I know who I am. And because I know who I am, my husband knows who I am. My parents know who I am. My brother knows who I am. You know who I am.
I know you.
And that also has not ever changed from how you all knew me at the same time. I just have now gotten a little better at being able to explain it for myself on my own terms.
Well, like I said earlier, you know, all of my children all grown up, and I'm proud of every one of them, you know, and every time I meet them, I'm very happy to meet them. Lindsay, again, I want to thank you for coming, taking your Sunday,
absolutely,
and visiting and doing this podcast with me, and I hope we can talk about this, we can have another chat.
Absolutely.
Sometime soon. But this podcast is emanating from the Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, Nassau. We are a country with 700 islands. 30 of them are inhabited, and we have beautiful, beautiful people. Not only the beautiful water and climate, it's really hot today, right, Lindsay?
It is pretty hot. I mean, I love it, but it's pretty hot.
Yeah, it's really hot today. But we are beautiful people and very proud people. And again, Lindsay, thank you for coming on Tea and Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, Lindsay, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Tea and Talk. You're listening to the podcast Tea and Talk.